From the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's time for Earth First Radio. Stay tuned for No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music.
We're cutting chainsaws, killing the trees, softening everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run, but there's nowhere to go when the job is done. All takes place. We've got to stop this inhuman race. No compromise. No compromise. No compromise. No compromise. No compromise in defense of Mother Earth. Earth First.
And welcome to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. Every week I bring you No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music for activists on the front lines of the environmental movement. In the news, you'll hear about the folks who are killing the planet and the folks who have detailed information about saving what's left. They all have names, addresses, phone numbers, fax numbers, email, or web addresses, so please go get a pencil or a pen and some recycled paper to write down the information I'm going to give you, because this isn't couch potato radio. It's activist radio, and I urge you to take down the information and act on it. You really can make a difference by writing letters, sending faxes, and making phone calls when you aren't out in the woods, up in a tripod or a tree sit, or locked down in the dragon at the road blockade. If you have information, announcements, or comments for Earth First Radio, please keep your pencil handy and listen for the contact addresses later on in the show. Want to start out today by mentioning that Earth First Radio is heard on Free Radio Austin 97.1. And they say they love Earth First Radio. Well, we love you too, Free Radio Austin. Keep it up down there. All right, job announcement here. You want a job in Bloomington, Indiana, full-time, 40 hours a week? Well, Heartwood is a nonprofit organization dedicated to protecting and restoring the native forest of the central Heartwood region. Heartwood operates in 18 states throughout the Midwest, South, and East, with offices in Bloomington, Indiana, and Charlottesville, Virginia. In the heart of Heartwood is our strong sense of place and friendship within our circle, as well as our governance by a regionally representative coordinating council. And they're looking for a director to oversee the organization, including day-to-day operations of the Bloomington, Indiana office. I suppose you'll have to work there if you want this job. Qualifications are: a person must be willing to relocate to the greater Bloomington, Indiana area. He or she must have excellent written and verbal communication skills and a basic knowledge of hardwood forest ecology and Forest Service misoperations. He or she must have a basic computer skills, and the candidate must have experience working with the media. You are going to have to work some weekends throughout the year and travel throughout the Midwest, South, and East. $18,000 a year could be yours. 4 weeks paid vacation, paid holidays, basic health insurance, sick pay, flexible hours, good time, lasting friendships, and a supportive forest activist community. You can check them out at www.heartwood.org. And here's the address for your resume and references. They want three of those. Heartwood, P.O. Box 1424. Bloomington, Indiana, 47402. That's Heartwood, P.O. Box 1424, Bloomington, Indiana, 47402. If you got questions, give them a call, 812-337-8898. That is 812-337-8898. Or send your stuff to inform@heartwood.org. That email address, once again, is inform@heartwood.org. There will be an interview sometime before September 15th, which is when you have to have your stuff in, okay? Coming up in the southern communities of the United States are some scoping hearings. These are Forest Service hearings, and they're going to be making plans concerning chip mills. This is a federal forest health study, and they want your information. The next scoping meeting is in Tifton, Georgia on August 31st. That's Tifton, Georgia. I have no idea where that is. August 31st, 2 to 4 in the afternoon and 7 to 9 p.m. It's held at the University of Georgia Rural Development Center in Tifton, Georgia. And if you'd like more information, contact the Dogwood Alliance. Their number, 828-883-5889. Lots of eights. 828-883-5889. Or send that email to info@dogwoodalliance, all one word, .org. All right. Dogwood Alliance. Info@dogwoodalliance.org. All right. Oh, coming up real soon, in August 28th and 29th, join the Friends of the Eel River and the California Wilderness Coalition, some great folks. They're going to give you a free tour of the Upper Eel River watershed in the Mendocino National Forest, and this is part of areas proposed under Wildlands 2000, the next statewide wilderness protection bill. They'll gather Saturday the 28th, which is in just a couple of days, at 8:30 a.m. for a brief discussion of what Wildlands 2000 is and what it's designed to do. And then they'll spend the rest of the day exploring the proposed wilderness areas in the watershed. And then again, it's Saturday evening is a dinner and BYOB party and camp out on the banks of the Eel. I'll give directions for that in just a minute. On Sunday, threats to the Eel River from dams and water diversions, and a tour will be led, and they'll get done with that by no later than 4 p.m. on Sunday. If you want to come early on Friday night, there's camping at the first bridge over the Eel River. Again, directions below. If you want to eat with them, they request a donation of $25. They want to know if you're coming. Okay, where do you do? You go to the first bridge over the Eel River on Eel River Road. What to bring? Camping gear and all that stuff. Directions: take Highway 101 to the Highway 101, Highway 20 intersection, approximately 3 miles north of Ukiah. That's the road to Clear Lake, if I'm not misunderstaken. Highway 20 east to Eastside Potter Valley Road. Turn left in the community of Potter Valley. Turn right on Eel River Road and drive to the first bridge. You want information? Call Ryan Henson of the California Wilderness Coalition. His number, 530-474-4808. That's 530-474-4808. That's this weekend, August 28th and 29th. Probably a little late for email, but you can try ryan@calwild.org. Calwild.org. September 3rd through September 5th is the Red Tail Deep Ecology Rendezvous. It's a deep ecology gathering of people of the Maritimes of Eastern Canada. They'll be meeting in outside of Scottsburn, Pictou County, Nova Scotia, Canada. And hope they have a good time up there. Get up there if you want to go. I have no idea where Scottsburn, Pictou County, Nova Scotia is, but I suppose it ain't a very big place. So look for all the people there September 3rd through 5th for their little rendezvous. Let's see here. There is a meeting in Oregon about clear cutting in Western Oregon. And, oh, this is the one that has the impossible email web address. Forget that. People got to get better information to me. Okay. The East Siskiyou Natural History Field Camp, you probably have to be signed up for that already. It starts August 29th and runs through September 4th at the Daku Betete Environmental Education Program headquarters, in coordination with Antioch University. You better send email, because if you want to go to this, you probably have to be there already. Send your email to deep@mind.net. There's no deep to Dennis tonight. deep@mind.net. The Forest Reform Rally, September 10th through 12th. Mark your calendars for the 1999 Forest Reform Rally called Rewilding. Okay. It's going to take place in the inspiring High Uinta Mountains at Camp Steiner, about 1.5 to 2 hours east of Salt Lake City, depending on how fast you drive, on the Mirror Lake Highway. Way too much information in this, but here is how you want to make your registrations. Contact Susan Ash at WUFC wufc@xmission.com. That's wufc@xmission.com. Or you can just send an inquiry to American Lands, 726 7th Street Southeast, Washington, D.C., 20003. Once again, that's American Lands, 726 7th Street Southeast, Washington, D.C., 20003. And get out to Utah for the Rewilding, the 1999 Forest Reform Rally, the Wild Rockies Rendezvous, September 17th through 19th. The Alliance for the Wild Rockies is sponsoring this event, subtitled Connecting People with Places. Once again, it's September 17th through 19th at the Montana Snow Bowl, 20 minutes from downtown Missoula, Montana. Registration, $10. Hey, this is a cheap one. For more information, contact Bob Clark with the Alliance for the Wild Rockies at 406-721-5420. That's 406-721-5420. And, of course, Bob Clark's email address is bobclark, all one word, at wildrockies.org. And, of course, their webpage, www.wildrockies.org/AWR. All right. Great, folks. September 15th is the No New Round turnaround. That's the International Day of Action against the World Trade Organization up in Seattle. September 15th, take action and let people know that you oppose any attempts to broaden the scope and power of the World Trade Organization. Enough is enough. In its 5 years of existence, the World Trade Organization has proved to be a disaster for democracy, workers, and the environment. Rather than expand this flawed organization, we need a turnaround. Oh, how can you get in touch? 1-877-STOP-WTO. That's 1-877-STOP-WTO. And for those of you who like numbers, that's 1-877-786-7986. 786-7986. The Georgia Forest Watch Retreat, September 24th through the 26th. Georgia Forest Watch will be having its annual weekend retreat. Many speakers, they say, including Tim Inglesby, giving a lesson on fire ecology. For more information, contact Lynn Kumiski at lkumiski@earthlink.net. That's L-C-U-M-I-S-K-E-Y @earthlink.net. And the Virginia Forest Health Conference, Real Forest Health, will be the subject, September 25th, at the Southwest Virginia Higher Education Center in Abingdon, Virginia. It's going to have speakers, all kinds of stuff going on. For more information, contact Steve Brooks with the Virginia Forest Watch. His email address, VAFW, Virginia Forest Watch at MONET.com. That's VAFW at MONET.com. I guess that's short for Mountain Net. MONET.com. How about a phone number? 540-479-2176. 540-479-2176. And we'll leave the October announcements for later on in September. Once again, our action update. In Washington, on Watch Mountain, in the Gifford-Pinchot National Forest, this tree sit, or action, not sure what it is, started on July 1997. They're still going. A tree sit in the South Bronx of New York. Details soon. I've never gotten more details. Started in this spring. Don't know what's going on. In Minnesota, the Minnehaha Tree Village is probably still under attack. In California, Luna is still being occupied by Julia Butterfly. And that tree sit started on 1097. In California, the Gypsy Mountain Tree Village. Contact North Coast Earth First. That one started in 1998. The Freshwater Tree Sit in Freshwater Creek, just east of Eureka. In Oregon, the Right View Timber Sale Tree Sit on the Umpqua BLM land. In Oregon, the Winberry Tree Village in the Willamette National Forest, 700-year-old cedar trees are being protected since January of 99. Oregon, the Fall Creek Tree Village in the Willamette National Forest, Red Cloud Thunder. Those folks are been up there since 498. And also in Oregon, the Eagle Tree Village, Willamette National Forest. Contact Cascadia Forest Alliance, started in 499 and still active. And the Alajo Valley, British Columbia Action Camp is still going strong despite harassment and an injunction. People's Action for Threatened Habitat and the Forest Action Network are successful in halting international forest products from logging in the upper Alajo Valley, which is the proposed Stoltman Wilderness area. Uncle Dennis has seen that proposal. This place is absolutely stunning, folks. There are no roads for many, many miles around this place. Lots of bears, lots of trees. They've got tree sits going. They've got on-ground support actions currently underway to protect this 1,000-year-old forest from being clear-cut. And the action camp has been steadily growing since it started. So get yourself up to BC. All right, action news from Maine. Old Town Maine. This is a story from Of the News staff, written by Jeff Tuttle. In what researchers are calling an act of eco-terrorism, a half-acre stand of genetically engineered corn was destroyed sometime late Wednesday night or Thursday morning. That's last week, according to the police. Police are investigating the late-night vandalism at the University of Maine-owned Rogers Farm, where about 1,000 stalks of man-made corn were hacked with what appears to be a machete, according to university researchers. Genetically engineered plants differ from conventional plants in that they contain from 1 to 3 additional genes, which are spliced into the plant's DNA, and a corresponding number of new proteins are made. The additions may increase the plant size, help resist disease, or in the case of the University of Maine corn, prevent damage from herbicides. John Jemison, a water quality specialist with the university's cooperative extension, said Thursday that he had been using the corn to study its resistance to the popular herbicide Roundup. The seed for the corn at Rogers Farm was donated by the DeKalb Seed Company, a subsidiary of the Monsanto Corporation. Monsanto also manufactures Roundup. Jemison said he believed the act of eco-terrorism to be specifically directed against the genetically altered crop. Duh. Which environmental activists have targeted for destruction elsewhere. It's a shame, Jemison said as he looked over the hacked plot of corn. We're not trying to hide anything here. We're just trying to provide Maine farmers with some practical research. The crop is legal in Maine and has been approved by the Food and Drug Administration. Jemison said it was not being grown for human consumption, but was to be fed to cows when the research was complete. Jemison said he was able to complete initial weed control research, but the crop's destruction made it impossible to determine the crop's yield and difficult to estimate the weeds left over at the experiment's conclusion. Jemison and John Rebar, the extension's program administrator, shook their heads while they looked over the destruction Thursday afternoon while welcoming civil public discussion of genetically engineered crops. Rebar said the late-night destruction was needless and made it difficult to continue with productive talks with those who opposed the crop. Those opposed to genetically modified crops, specifically corn, cite its potential for cross-pollination with other varieties of corn as well as the practice of inserting foreign genes into a plant to enhance its productivity. It may be that I find that farmers shouldn't be using this crop, Jemison said, but I won't know until I study it. The people responsible for this didn't even want me to try, and that doesn't sit well with academics. I'm just glad no one was hurt, Rebar added. Environmental activist Nancy Oden of Jonesboro, Maine, said Thursday that while she did not destroy the plants, she commended those who did. I'm glad they did it, Oden said during an interview with the Bangor Daily News offices. It may not have been legal, but it was the moral thing to do. Oden, who was scheduled to meet with Jemison and Rebar this on Thursday morning, said that she had planned to bend a few ears of corn down as a nonviolent protest during the meeting, but did not know who was responsible for the late-night destruction. The meeting was canceled Wednesday by Jemison after a scheduling conflict, he said. In an August 16th email sent to other activists and also sent to the news, Oden gave explicit directions to the location of the cornfield and advised activists to wear a mask to avoid the toxic pollen and gloves to avoid toxin throughout the plant if they had physical contact with the plants. Oden said Thursday that the email was not meant to incite destruction, only as information for environmentalists. The scope of the destruction led researchers to believe it was carried out by more than one person. The vandals left a few rows of corn on the borders of the stand, presumably to hide their actions, researchers surmised. Old Town Police and officers from the university's public safety department will step up their patrols in the area of the research farm to prevent any further destruction, according to University of Maine spokesman Joe Carr. And in a related article, Seeds of Resistance have claimed responsibility for the recent cutting down of genetically engineered corn in Old Town, Maine. This is the first of a series of actions. This action was taken in an effort to send a message to those who seek to benefit from the risky behavior of genetically engineering the food supply. By taking such actions, we hope to motivate individuals engaged in such efforts to look into other lines of work. There is absolutely no benefit to humanity from corn plants such as we're growing in Old Town other than those that create and sell them. These genetically altered corn plants do not taste better and are not more nutritious. They are only designed to sell more herbicide. Roundup, this in this case, manufactured by Monsanto. The idea that companies like Monsanto wish to end world hunger through patenting and genetically modifying the food supply are hollow public relations ploys, especially considering that there is already enough food produced in the world to feed everyone, and that the hunger problem is one of distribution, not production. Seeds of Resistance would like to take this opportunity to ask people from all walks of life to consider who is really benefiting from the genetic engineering of the food supply. It certainly isn't the consumers of such foods. Creative ways of showing our disapproval with genetically engineered foods are going on all over the world, and particularly in Europe. Only recently has this phenomenon begun to catch on in the United States. Our recent action in Old Town was the first of a series of actions. We encourage more people to join in. And that was a press release from Seeds of Resistance. Okay. In more activist news, the nonviolent protesters who sued Humboldt County authorities over the use of pepper spray are entitled to a jury trial, the American Civil Liberties Union of Northern California told a federal appeals court last week. In a friend of the court brief filed on behalf of the demonstrators, the ACLU said that the lower court erred in ruling that application of pepper spray to nonviolent protesters engaged in civil disobedience constituted reasonable force under the law. On the basis of that finding, the court dismissed the case after a jury deadlocked over the matter. The ACLU argues in its brief that in justifying the denial of a jury trial, the district court and Humboldt officials overstated the constitutional authority to use pain compliance on demonstrators engaged in civil disobedience and understated the harmful impact of pepper spray. On three separate occasions during the protest, Humboldt law enforcement authorities applied Q-tips soaked in pepper spray directly to the eyes of the protesters who had linked their hands inside metal sleeves. The ACLU believes that the use of pepper spray as a kind of chemical cattle prod on nonviolent demonstrators resisting arrest constitutes excessive force and violates the Constitution, said Margaret C. Crosby, an ACLU of Northern California staff attorney who wrote the brief with Police Practices Director John Crewe. Certainly, a jury should be afforded the opportunity to evaluate the new experimental use of a chemical weapon. The friend of the court brief summarizes empirical, scientific, and toxicological research on pepper spray, and scientific literature refutes the repeated depiction by the trial judge and by Humboldt County that pepper spray is a benign organic substance that only causes transient discomfort, the ACLU's Crosby said. In fact, pepper spray ingredients alone and in combination with solvents that create the weapon have a variety of physiological effects, she added. The courts have recognized that pepper spray may be a dangerous chemical weapon, resulting in liability to government or private parties, or incarceration to criminal defendants. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled earlier this year, in the context of sentencing guidelines for criminal defendants, that pepper spray may constitute a dangerous weapon. Federal sentencing guidelines define a dangerous weapon as capable of inflicting death or serious bodily injury, causing extreme physical pain, or the protracted impairment of a function of a bodily member, organ, or mental faculty, and requiring medical intervention such as surgery, hospitalization, or physical rehabilitation. The ACLU brief argues that the use of pepper spray on environmental demonstrators requires a jury trial under established constitutional standards. The single most important consideration in assessing reasonable use of force is whether the suspect poses an immediate threat to the safety of the officers or others. The Humboldt County authorities arrested peaceful demonstrators seated, linked, and locked into metal devices, Crosby said. They were dramatizing their commitment to protecting old-growth redwood trees, and they were not menacing anyone. So that case is hopefully going to go back to court. All right, we're going to listen to a little music here in just a few minutes, and then we'll be back with animal news and news from around the states and around the world. So stay tuned to Earth First Radio. We'll be right back. As soon as I can figure out where this tape deck is. Oh, there it is. It's right over there. Hey, here we go. Radio. Be right back after this short break. Thank you.